And we will move on to the fourth case of this morning, Dalton against Office of Workers' Compensation Programs, number 13-1243. Ms. Davis.
Good morning. The Dalton children and their father, the late William Dalton, have won all elements of eligibility in this Black Lung case. That is, that he was a minor, that he had pneumoconiosis, that he was totally disabled by it, and that the children have the right to succeed their father. And that's been affirmed by the Benefits Review Board, and the employer did not appeal. So the only issue that is properly before the court is, when do those benefits start? Specifically, our position is that substantial evidence supported the ALJ's finding that benefits started in August of 1991 when the minor stopped working because of his breathing problems.
So do we need to subdivide that into two issues? One, whether the ALJ abused her discretion in revisiting that issue. This is her round was the first one in which the August 91 date was chosen. So do we need to consider that issue preliminarily and then the merits?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor, because that was raised by the employer to the Benefits Review Board. The Benefits Review Board rejected that. The employer lost that issue and did not appeal. So that's gone.
Okay, so it's your position that the employer has waived any argument about the actual act of reopening the
that's
question?
Correct.
So the real issue, I think, is whether at that point there's substantial evidence in the record to show not just that he was disabled in August 1991, because he certainly seems to have been, but whether that disability was the result of whatever form of pneumoconiosis you want, legal, clinical, COPD, you know, whatever.
COPD caused by coal mine dust and smoking in this case, but that qualifies as legal pneumoconiosis. And that's right, Your Honor. And Judge Kraft relied on evidence that was in the record, and she rationally, you know, we looked at Dr. Cohen's opinion. Dr. Cohen identified what the minor had as coal dust contributed obstructive lung disease. He tied it to the year 1991. He noted that the minor was disabled as the result of pulmonary function tests, which were only 20 to 29% of predicted normal in 1991. So Dr. Cohen put all that together. He didn't expressly use magic words that said the minor was totally disabled by pneumoconiosis as of 1991, but the ALJ rationally inferred from his opinion that that's what he meant. And in addition, Your Honor, there were other things that supported the judge's finding, including the minor's own statement, which was sworn in his application, that he had stopped working in August of 1991 due to his breathing problems.
So did he ever, is there any evidence in this record that as of August 1991, the problem is exclusively a result of smoking or a result of anything else?
No credited evidence, Your Honor.
The children, when they intervened, I just wanted to clarify this. This was after
yes, she died before Mr. Dalton.
Then there's the children intervened. Was there any challenge to their intervention?
The employer did challenge that on the ground that the children didn't have any benefits to which they would be due. They didn't have any, they didn't have standing, in other words. And that is what, in fact, they took Judge Kraft ruled on that in 2010. The employer took an interlocutory appeal, which was dismissed on the collateral order doctrine, and then raised it again at the end of the case when Judge Kraft awarded benefits and the Benefits Review Board was reviewing that. And that is when the Benefits Review Board said, no, the children do have the right to continue this case. They succeed to their father because their father, had he lived, would have been able to seek an additional 20% in compensation from the employer if the employer didn't pay the benefits when due.
Was there an estate, claim in the estate and all that?
I do not believe so, but I'm not sure, Your Honor.
I'm just trying to frame it of where they come in. I mean, I guess he's got a lump sum question.
If you look at what Judge Kraft awarded, she awarded benefits back to August of 1991, so that's an additional 8 years of benefits that were taken away from these children by the Benefits Review Board's ruling. But if you look to the time, $60,000, Your Honor. It's a lot to these children.
It's the lump sum that I'm talking about.
Yes, right.
But there's after 99, that's already.
Yes, paid. He got the benefits payable from June of 1999 until his date of death. But he would have then had the opportunity, had he lived, to seek an additional 20% in compensation.
So the BRB finds this at page, I'm seeing this, at, you're referring to supplemental appendix 4 and 5 in your brief.
I'm sure that's right, Your Honor.
Yeah, I think so. Claimant's motion would be substituted as parties, and the BRB says we reject the error and affirm the ALJ's determination to substitute the minor's children.
Right. So for us, Your Honor, what's really at issue here is the 8 additional years of benefits that the BRB reversed the ALJ's ruling on. And we say there was substantial evidence to support that in the record. And what the board said is that the doctor had to say that the minor was totally disabled due to pneumoconiosis, and that is not the law. There isn't a requirement that the doctor expressly say that. The ALJ can infer it from the evidence in the record, including the doctor's opinion, which we say here, Dr. Cohen's opinion, was pretty close to that. And then there's this other evidence in the record that supports it.
And the ALJ's determination of that, is that something the board can't overturn?
That's right, Your Honor. The board cannot reweigh the evidence. And we think that is what the board did here. And we cited case law showing that the board can the board errs in taking that determination away from the ALJ. I'd like to save the rest of my time if that's okay.
Sure. Ms. Smith.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm Mary Lou Smith here on behalf of Frontier Kemper Constructors, Inc. As you are aware, we have a different view of how this case sits procedurally speaking. First off, the adult children of William Dalton have never established that they have a legal right to pursue anything on behalf of their father.
But the BRB did rule against you on
that. That's correct. But and this court is very, very careful of its jurisdiction, and it does not proceed unless it can assure itself that it has the proper parties before it who are pursuing the appeal.
That's not a jurisdictional argument. That's an argument dealing with.
Well, if you don't have a proper party before you, you don't have a jurisdiction over the
appeal. No, that's
the
not true. Sometimes you dismiss because somebody doesn't have a claim that, upon which relief can be granted. It's not a jurisdictional issue. The Supreme Court has told us to be very careful about what we label. We certainly have the authority to adjudicate this black lung dispute. And if we find that somebody who hasn't been given a legal right to recover is the only party left in the case, we well might find that that's a problem, but it's not a jurisdictional problem.
All right. Well, Your Honor, I do believe that it is a problem here. And I want to emphasize that the issue of who is legally entitled to pursue a matter on behalf of Mr. Dalton's estate and the issue of who might financially benefit ultimately are two different things. It's true that if benefits were awarded to Mr. Dalton's estate and it turned out that his adult children were the individuals who would be entitled to the distribution of his estate, then indeed they do have an interest in that distribution.
So but what about 20 CFR 725.360B, which says that a widow, child, et cetera, who makes a showing that his or her rights may be prejudiced, may be made a party, and the court then goes, or the BRB then goes on to say that the claimants actually have a monetary interest because they may be entitled to collect this additional 20%.
Yes, I understand, Your Honor. That's the crux of the issue. Whether
there's certainly an Article III adverse relationship. They think they can get more money if they're.
Well, it's very speculative whether they think they can get more money. And I emphasize that the question of a penalty assessment is not determined within the context of the actual adjudication of the claim.
Oh, the regulation says, yeah, it's if benefits aren't paid within 10 days, you add to the unpaid benefits an amount equal to 20%, and so on and so on. So.
But in order to collect that 20%.
They've got skin in the game, right?
Well, I don't concede that they necessarily do. And the ALJ apparently recognized that there was some question about whether that 20% really gave them anything to look forward to, because she, sua sponte, raised the issue of the date of entitlement to benefits in order specifically to give them an actual monetary interest in the adjudication of the claim.
Why do you think that's the reason she did that?
Well, I don't know. That I may have misstated. That may not be the reason that she did it, but by doing that.
If she thought, yeah, I mean, that certainly adds to the.
By doing that, she did create a monetary interest in the adjudication of the claim. And we say, Your Honor, that she improperly raised that sua sponte.
Why? What limits are there on an ALJ's ability to revisit? I mean, these cases go on for a scandalous amount of time, given the amount of money that's involved in them. But be that as it may, you know, once you've got this system, what prevented the ALJ from raising that point?
Nothing prevented her from raising it. The constraint on her raising it was that she had to tell the parties that she was going to consider an issue that no one had ever brought up, no one had ever argued.
Do you have the right to file a request for reconsideration from an ALJ's decision?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
And did you?
We did
on
not.
This point?
But there is
so
no requirement that one file a motion for reconsideration.
No, I mean, but if you think that the problem is that you didn't have notice and you had arguments you wanted to raise, wouldn't that be a better way of doing it?
I don't know that it would be better. We did take that on appeal to the board.
Lost. Yeah.
Yes, we did lose. But we lost not on the basis of her bringing the issue up sua sponte. The board did not rule on that issue. The board instead went off on its own tangent and said, we don't need to address that issue because we're going to say she resolved it incorrectly. So the board did not rule on our sua sponte argument. It instead took an approach that had the same result that we were seeking, but did not resolve our argument. So we
actually, no. The board, this is essay 11, this is page 11, says, initially we reject the employer's assertion that the administrative law judge abused her discretion in addressing the issue of the commencement of benefits date when the issue was not contested by employer. And then this paragraph goes on, and they conclude at the end of it, the ALJ permissibly evaluated. Then it's only on the next page where they say on the merits, we don't agree with the modification. So I would say that, in fact, at the right to reopen question, they ruled against you.
All right. They did rule against us, Your Honor. But the critical issue that they went off on, it didn't matter really whether she could address it or not. They said she addressed it wrong. And we believe in the context of this appeal, it is appropriate for us to bring up the issue of the sua sponte raising the ALJ's improperly sua sponte raising it, is because we support the board's ultimate conclusion on that point, even though we have a different argument. So in our view, we are not precluded from making that argument.
No, you can make the argument. It's just I would like you to understand that you did not prevail in that argument before the BRB. It doesn't bother me if you are mentioning it now. I'm troubled by the way you read Dr. Cohen's statement, because it sure looked a lot to me like a common sense expression that the minor's disability in 1991 was because of the legal pneumoconiosis, odd term that it is, that he was suffering from at the time he stops work.
Well, primarily the evidence that they're relying upon doesn't address specifically whether the disability was due to cigarette smoking or coal mine employment.
Well, he says, this is the bottom, Dr. Cohen identified the causal connection. Well, this is a quote from the record, CX5 at 16. Clearly, coal dust causes obstructive lung disease with impairment of the FEV 1, like it did to Mr. Dalton. And then he says, Mr. Dalton's disease was significant enough to have caused his disability for his last coal mining job. And he's talking about 1991 here. So he doesn't say quite the sentence that you're looking for, but isn't that the import of the comment?
Well, Your Honor, at this point, it isn't for the court to necessarily address what the medical evidence, how the medical evidence should be interpreted.
It is, though, for us to look at the record to see if there was evidence in the record on which the administrative law judge permissibly could have relied to say that the onset date was August 1991.
Correct.
That's the issue.
Correct.
And I'm having trouble understanding why the ALJ was forbidden to rely on Dr. Cohen.
I would say because she needed to, in order to support her determination, she was required to consider all of the evidence, including Dr. Cohen's statements, but everything else as well, including the evidence such as the blood gas studies that did not show any disability, including the other medical evidence that did not establish any sort of causation, certainly nothing in the treatment records. For instance, Dr. Janney, however it's pronounced, his treating physician certainly never opined before the black lung claim was filed that there was any disability associated with coal mine employment. The ALJ was required to consider all of that evidence before determining the date of the proper date for the commencement.
Well, what she says is based on the qualifying pulmonary function testing in June 1991 and the opinions of Drs. Beck and Cohen, I find that he was totally disabled and entitled to benefits commencing in August 1991. She says in the previous paragraph that this has to do with the pulmonary impairment and, you know, the work in the mines and so on. So it's not a long discussion. I absolutely agree with you on that. And if it had gone on for 5 pages reviewing everybody's evidence, maybe it would have been better. But it does seem to address the point.
It addresses the point that I don't believe that you can fairly say that the ALJ considered all of the relevant evidence in reaching this determination, especially if she was
even
doing
even though she's reviewed everybody earlier in this same order. Do you think she just suffered from amnesia at the end? Or
no, I believe, though, when she was reviewing all of the other evidence early on, she was doing it in the context of assessing our petition for modification. And as such, she was looking to what we had managed to show, not what claimant had managed to show. She was construing the evidence to see whether we had established the negative basis for ruling out entitlement as opposed to looking for the positive basis for claimant to support the request for the opposition to modification. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Davis?
Just a few things, Your Honor. Just a few things, Your Honor. With respect to whether the children had the legal right to bring this appeal, I think we've answered that in a brief. There are parties that are aggrieved, and I just want to correct one error in the brief. We had a typographical error. I had cited the statute as 33 U.S.C. 932C. It's actually 33 U.S.C. 921C. I had it right in the opening brief, but in the reply brief, I had the typo, and I just want to make sure that I corrected it for you. Certainly the Dalton children are parties aggrieved by a final ruling of the board. They don't have to file a separate claim. They don't have to file a survivor's claim or anything like that. They're parties aggrieved. With respect to whether Judge Kraft considered all the evidence, I think it's fair to say she did, 33 single-spaced page opinion. She looked at everything, and employer's lawyer may be referring to a burden of proof argument that she made, but I think it's pretty clear when you look at the judge's opinion where she put the burden of proof, and it was on the claimant of establishing the earlier date of entitlement. If there's anything else I can answer?
Apparently not. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to both counsel, and we'll take this case under advisement.